From Community Public Radio, this is the CPR News. From New York, I'm Don DeBar.
I apologize for the hiatus we were on over the last week and a half. My wife passed away, and I was preoccupied with that. We're back, and we're going to jump right into this election, what's happened in the last 2 weeks, by speaking with Professor Tony Montero. It's a pleasure to speak with you again.
Yeah, thank you, Don, and I want to publicly extend my condolences to you and wish you strength as you go forward face of the loss of your beloved and dear wife.
Thank you very much, man. I appreciate it. Yeah, it's tough. It's been a tough couple weeks. So here we are. It's going to be a tough couple weeks going ahead for the whole planet, it looks like. Let's pick up where we left off, like 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a front page article in the New York Times today where Donald Trump has once again publicly and in his tweets and in his speeches said that this election will be rigged, and the fix is already in, and he points in particular to the corporate media's unapologetic and completely biased support for Hillary Clinton, and he goes on to suggest that votes will be stolen, dead people will vote, and I guess he's also drawing attention to, and I put quotes, the problems in the election from 2000 on with the voting machines, and especially in Ohio. Yeah. And of course, Florida was a different case in 2000. And of course, this has brought a deep response and an angry response from mainly the Republican elite,
right,
who was saying that, of course, elections in the United States are the fairest in the world, and who would ever question that? And Donald Trump is in fact attacking one of the basic foundations of American liberal democracy. And I guess for them and the media and the elite generally, the ruling elite generally, this makes Donald Trump a fascist. But then on the other side, his message of a rigged system is resonating broadly and deeply among those who intend to vote for him, many of those who don't intend to vote at all, many who are going to sit this one out, and certainly among many who are voting for Hillary Clinton, who themselves know that the whole thing is rigged, but since it's rigged in their favor, they can accept it. But what this is, again, is what political scientists call a crisis of legitimacy.
Right.
That is to say, when broad sections of the people do not accept the legitimacy of elections or the outcomes of elections, and therefore are prepared to contest the outcomes of elections by protest and other means, that is a crisis of legitimacy. The country is more deeply split than at any time since the start of the Civil War. Nothing has been quite like this. And here is where we are, and our analysis must begin here. In terms of the left is without a theory or a politic to understand what is going on. Those who read Lenin I would suggest that they read those parts of State and Revolution where Lenin speaks about such a crisis as one where the people will not be ruled in the old way, and those who rule them cannot rule in the old way. So that's where we are, 3 weeks out from the general election.
You know, so but let's detail some of that, because, for example, you know, we had the whole thing in Florida, and there were some other states too, by the way, in 2000. They don't talk about that very much, but. And then, again, in Ohio and Arizona and several other states in 2004, we had, people don't talk about this anymore because Obama won in 2008 and in the primaries he won in New York, for example. But in New York, Obama didn't get a single vote in one district in Harlem, according to the official tally. This is back in the primaries in 2008. You know, everybody just looked like, come on. And you've been to some of the discussions that Glenn Ford and some of the other people had put together, and you, too, had put together in Harlem, where Harlem discussed the Obama presidency before it happened and after, you know, during it. You saw the support he had among the community, broad support, where, you know, some of us who were going in there saying, you know, he's an imperialist, looking over our shoulder like, I just got my thump on our head because they really like him, you know. So the idea, you know, that was 2008. That's how ridiculous that was. We had this year the detailed, by WikiLeaks, theft of the election, the primary election by Hillary Clinton from the Bernie Sanders, basically from Bernie Sanders. That's even in litigation still. They're fighting over the vector between the exit polls that we've reported on and the actual vote, where using the State Department standards, looking at the exit polls for the primaries, Bernie Sanders should have won on her first ballot at the Democratic convention. There is the crisis of legitimacy is, you know, a response to an illegitimate condition that's out in view of everyone.
Absolutely. And in effect, Donald Trump is taking a wrecking ball to the American establishment, the neoliberal order. He's taking a wrecking ball to it. And what he is saying and doing resonates with almost half of the electorate and probably a larger part of the American people. And contrary to all of the contortions and distortions of so-called political and social surveys, the base of the Trump movement remains the white working class and the white poor. That is what is driving what he calls a movement, which is not the Republican Party, and he is clear on that. His movement has weakened the Republican Party. It is now on life support. It may not survive the 2016 election. Most of the elite, including former presidents and presidential candidates of the Republican Party, have fled to the Hillary Party of war, austerity, and depression. So the people then are left to their own devices. The masses will have to decide what is to be done and where we go from here. This is one of those moments where a new zeitgeist, I'll use that word, a new spirit, a new era in history is about to be born, and a new type of leadership will come forward. And people are thinking in ways that they have not thought in decades. And you and I agree on this.
Yeah.
I do not dismiss or rule out the white part of the American working class making a historic contribution to the struggle against war. Now, the white working class cannot do it alone. It will need, in particular, the African-American proletariat
That's right.
to come forward, which I am suggesting it will do, as it did after the primaries in the Democratic Party got out of the southern states. We began to see in Michigan, in Missouri, in Pennsylvania, in Ohio, the black vote, guided in particular by the millennials and the black working class, begin to break with the Democratic Party, with Hillary Clinton, and side with the message of Bernie Sanders, although they didn't really know Bernie Sanders. So I think this is a turbulence, a period of turbulence and crisis. And we have to, as the OJ said in his song, get on board.
You know, for those who are listening to us and thinking that we're taking like some cookie-cutter Marxist model and trying to imprint it on this mass of stuff that's in front of us happening right now, let's detail a little of the history of what's been happening with the working class. We could, you know, we could start with the late 90s the people that were protesting WTO and all of that stuff and trade deals.
Yeah.
We can go through the Occupy movement that stood up, the anti-war movement, first of all, that stood up in 2003 in millions. And was tamped down. The Occupy movement that spread like wildfire across the planet, but particularly across this country, with a single message: there is a 1% and a 99%, and you are in the 99%. And that message was learned by the entire population of this country. They just routinely speak in those terms now. And then you've had this set of uprisings that, first of all, the objective conditions for workers have been declining for 40 years, if not 65, going back to Taft-Hartley or however far back you want to go when they started to undo what happened in the 30s and 20s and before. You have the stirrings that were represented finally in the Obama campaign. Obama was the outsider. He got elected as the outsider. Now, people are not politically sophisticated, and we'll get to this part. The media occludes and, you know, paints murals and does all kinds of things to obfuscate what's going on. But Obama was riding the fear, anxiety, and the suffering that was already accumulated from the recession and as a consequence of economic policy going back at least to Reagan. And so after he came in and that got tamped down over the last 8 years, you saw these uprisings among the voters behind Sanders and behind Trump, and also the uprisings in the streets. And it looked like you had all of the elements that only needed like a Dr. Martin Luther King or someone to walk in and have a joint meeting of all of them and say, okay, we're going to go to Washington tomorrow, all of us, shoulder to shoulder. And that didn't happen. Instead, what happened is that the Black Lives Matter people were turned away from Sanders and neutralized to at least a sufficient degree where the vote would be close enough that they could steal it, which they did. Trump and the working class aligned behind him becomes the enemy. He's a fascist. He's Hitler. All of this. The media echoing all of that. The workers behind Sanders discouraged on every point, everything that comes out. He's going to rape your sister. He's on cocaine. Whatever else. Every message they can throw out, keep all of these three elements apart. And yet we're at this moment that you're describing. It is clear there's multiple crises. We've got a global economic crisis that's unfolding in front of us. We're about to enter World War III, apparently. And yet we have these three sections of the working class that are still not united for sure and being highly encouraged to go at each other's throats. And you see the division half and half. It's mapped down on every survey that you look at. So what the hell do we do?
Well, I'd just like to make a proposal that that narrative that you just gave be taken out of this conversation and put up on YouTube or somewhere. It's very moving, and it's so accurate, and it contextualizes where we are. Now, taking a step back and looking at the working class, or as we might say, the working masses, which also includes the lower middle class, those sections of working people who do not self-identify as workers for multiple reasons. But look at this, this huge majority of the American population, which is, as you put it, stirring. It is thinking. It is coming in different ways and from different places to what we could call a class consciousness. And that is a consciousness that we working people, no matter what our race or our origins or our gender or our sexual identities, no matter what all of these particularities of our situation might be, we face a common plight. And if you listen to Trump, his message is not the division of the working class. He is hitting on those issues around which the working class can unite. And that is, first and primarily, opposition to a ruling elite who have used and abused the working people of this country, have used the white working class and poor against black people, against Latinos, against all who didn't hold the values of the Republican Party elite. Now the white section of the working class and the white poor and sections of the white middle class are breaking with that and attacking that message and attacking those messengers. This is huge. I think that we are on the cusp of a new era in American history. No matter who wins the election, and it looks like Hillary will be the president, she will be a president. It will be a presidency that is illegitimate to tens of millions of Americans, and they will attack her as an illegitimate elected president who was elected on the basis of a rigged election in which the corporate media played a huge role. Yeah. I think that when you link this to what is going on in the world, and by the world I mean Britain, I mean Greece, I mean South Africa, I mean the Democratic Republic of Congo, I mean Haiti, I mean the growing militancy and self-defense of its interests of Russia and then of China, of a new configuration of the BRIC nations, that is Brazil, Russia, India, China, and South Africa, this majority of the human race, the growing, the reconfiguring of their aims and purposes. Then you get the Philippines, which has taken a position to side with China against the United States. And then on top of that, we have to thank the Bernie movement and the Trump movement. It does not look like TPP can get through the Congress of the United States. So that's dead on arrival, and that's a good thing. And that has to be seen as a victory of these two movements of the working class within our country in this year. Now, the bigger question going forward is, and now we got to put Bernie Sanders out of the picture. He can't be a part of the movement that he headed going forward. Can the forces of Trump and Sanders and forces beyond them unite to stop the possibility of a World War III?
Yeah. And see, the question's not even posed in the public domain properly, because Trump is seen as the agent of World War III and Clinton not, because they're not reporting on what's happening within that context under the Obama administration as an expression of the policy that was started with Clinton's Department of State.
Yeah, but anyone who looks at this thing closely, and certainly the experts who are outside the neoconservative political cabal, anyone that looks at this, I don't care if it's Stephen Cohen or John Pilger, the Australian, or I can't remember all their names.
Right.
Anyone who looks at this, Margaret Kimberly.
Right. Well, Glenn and Bruce,
Or Glenn Ford, they all say the same thing, that the Democratic Party and the Big Tent is the party of war. The party of war is the anti-working class party. That's what King's message was. War is the enemy of the poor. And that is what we are faced with. We have to get in this movement. Like, you and I were fortunate enough to be at both party conventions. And we believe our lying eyes.
That's right.
What we saw was not what most people thought took place. Nor do they understand the nature of a rebellion that comes from unexpected places. And nor do they understand rebellion. And you know, Don, I think more than anything, and we talk about this continually, what is called the left has been exposed completely as nothing but a tale of the liberals. And they will follow the liberals to war and the destruction of the planet. They do not have the courage, most of them, to stand up and speak truth to power. You and I discussed Adolf Reed, a friend and a man that I admire, a great academic, a great intellectual. His essay, calling for the support of Hillary Clinton, the war maker,
right,
the liar, right, the neoliberal, because in his mind, and he never validates his assertions, Trump is the greater danger. Right. And so we should fall back into lesser evil kinds of patterns of thought. I think Adolf Reed has to rethink that position. And even if it means publicly taking a different stance, he has to do it. Because this is a time that we need courage, not defending what I stood for a month or 2 months ago or a year ago. We're in a different kind of situation. And if you can't hear Don DeBars or Tony Montero's or Margaret Kimberly's voice on these matters or other people's voices on these matters, you know, listen to what the world is saying.
Yeah.
Listen to what is coming out of the Philippines. Listen to what the Chinese are saying. Hear what the Russians are saying. Lavrov. These people speak in very measured terms. Well, not the president of the Philippines.
Yeah.
But, you know, world leaders, they speak in measured terms. They're not blowhards. And they're saying kind of the same thing that we are saying. The fate of humanity is at stake. Clinton represents the great danger. Like John Batchelor and Stephen Cohen on the John Batchelor show, both of them agreed that Trump is, in this equation, in this situation, in this time and space, the candidate of peace against a great power confrontation. I think people like Adolf, the great Adolf Reed, has to listen, has to be more humble. People like Paul Street, you got to be more humble. You talk a lot, but you don't listen enough. Well, that's where we are.
You know, it's hard listening because the megaphone is all pervasive. You're getting the same narrative from Fox, even though they soft pedal it, but they have to soft pedal it because that's where people who are now Trump supporters traditionally, a lot of them traditionally went for news, mm-hmm. and they can't make them go away because if they do, they can't tell them what to do. But from mm-hmm. there all the way to Democracy Now, you have the same narrative being told. Trump represents some neo-fascist danger. He's unleashing forces that are going to devastate black and brown communities, and the whole race war is going to be set apart and all of that. And that's the narrative that was behind the Republican convention, as you recall. We went there because supposedly there were Nazis and there were going to be, Ku Klux Klan and stars and bars hanging everywhere and some swastikas on people's foreheads or whatever. And then we went there and met, and this is what I find amazing. I was talking with someone last week, very intelligent person, and they were telling me what the Republican convention was like, and I said, no, it wasn't. I was there. And they were like, you were there? Yes, yeah, so? Mm-hmm. Like I'm saying, yeah. You're watching it on TV. I produce television, by the way. I've been doing it for 30-something years. So I know what you aim the camera at, this elementary fact, what you aim the camera at, that what you stage in front of the camera is what people see on TV at home. And what's going on there is what's going on there. And I saw what was going on there. And Tony Montero was a witness to it, and he saw it. Okay? And what we saw wasn't what was coming out of the box. And ditto for Philadelphia. And I detailed it. And people are still like, well, that's one opinion. I'm like, it's the opinion of the guy in the room that was an eyewitness.
Mm-hmm. Well, the people that they think of as a basket of despicables understand the social and political reality better than they do. And this is a moment when the basic instincts produced by the conditions that working people live in have propelled ordinary working people far ahead of the left intelligentsia. You know, mm-hmm. they openly and are prepared to say that the corporate media is controlled by corporations, that Hillary Clinton is a puppet of Wall Street, that the system is rigged against them, and that the election has been conducted in such a way to smear them and the candidate that they will vote for. They know all of this. Their experiences in the trenches of political combat over the last year and a half have awakened them to certain truths that the left cannot swallow, cannot digest. They cannot. The left is locked in a set of dogmas that predisposes them away from the working class towards the liberal elite. Many of them teaching at universities, their conditions of work, of life, are shaped by a discourse controlled by the liberals. You know, their success as academics, as journalists, as intellectuals, their ability to have access is predicated upon their renouncing the working class or distancing themselves from the working class or quickly condemning a part of it as racist and so on. That's their world. That's their existential reality. And to understand the positions that they take, I think we have to take into account their conditions of life, the fact that they are a part of a petty bourgeoisie, and that their ambitions are fundamentally petty bourgeois. This is completely different than the conditions of people in Cleveland, in Youngstown, in Detroit, in St. Louis, in Philadelphia, in parts of New York, outside of Manhattan and Brooklyn. The conditions of the working class are dire, are desperate, are wretched, and people are looking for ways out of this crisis. And they will fight. They will fight alongside of Trump, but they're going to fight after Trump. And that's the good news.
And that's all the news we have for you right now. For Community Public Radio, I'm Don DeBar in New York. Thanks for listening.